Good evening, everybody. So welcome. Welcome to Masechta Sota. What we're going to be doing in this 15-minute slot at the beginning of each night seder is just to basically go over the Amud of Gemara that we're going to be working on tonight, and the idea is, you know, to just highlight, you know, the basic outline of the Gemara, what the topics basically are in the Gemara. Not going to get too fancy in terms of Mefarshim, and the point is that once you've heard it once and you've followed along inside once, it'll be much easier to do it together with the Chavrusa and delve even a little bit deeper together with a Chavrusa. So quick introduction to Masechta Sota. Masechta Sota is, of course, about the Sota. What is the Sota? If a man notices that his wife is hanging out too much and getting a little too comfortable with other men, so he has the option, we'll see if it's something that he's supposed to do or not supposed to do, but he has the option of being Mekanila, of offering a Kinoi, which is to express his jealousy, to express that he's uncomfortable with the way she's behaving, and subsequent to that, if she goes and has yichud with somebody, and she's alone with that man that he was makani with her about, she becomes a sota. And that means that they are not allowed to be together until her innocence is proved, or guilt is proven, by drinking the special potion of mei sota that we're going to learn about. I remember when I was in fifth grade, and my fifth grade Rabbi Zucker taught us about sota, because we were learning Parshas Naso. He told us the easy way to remember what a sota is sota pop, that when the sota drinks the mei sota, she may explode. That's not exactly true. She really might implode, as the Gemara is going to describe. She doesn't explode, but be that as it may, she's not going to survive the ordeal if she's in fact guilty. There's a carbon that's involved, but all we're going to learn about in the first parak is going to be about the halachos of the kinoi and the stira. The kinoi is the husband's expression of his jealousy. The stira is her subsequent being alone together with that man. So what language does he have to use? Does he just have to say, hey, I don't like how you've been looking at that guy? Or does he have to say magic words in order for it to be effective? What does stira mean? How much of a yichud does that mean? How long does she have to be alone with the guy? What kind of evidence do we need that they were together? How many people have to have seen that he had expressed his jealousy? How many people have to have seen that she was alone? So all of these things are going to be discussed in our parak. The first Mishnah is going to talk about specifically in front of how many people and what language he has to use to do the kinoi. Again, the kinoi is simply the expression of his jealousy. So let's see the Mishnah inside. Hamakani l'ishto, so right, we'll take it from the top. Someone who warns his wife that I don't want you to be alone with this guy because I'm suspicious that maybe you're having snus with him, that maybe you're sleeping with him. Rabbi Lazar Omer Mekani La Al Pishnayim. It doesn't count as a kinoi unless he does it in front of two edim. You need two edim to verify that he had done this, that he had said this, that he had expressed his jealousy. Otherwise, it is as if it did not happen. But umashka al pi ed echad o al pi atzmo. To get her to actually to take the next step and say, well, wait a second, I saw that you were alone with him after I warned you, after I told you not to be. I saw that you were alone with him. That happens al pi atzmo, even if he's the only one that saw her alone with him. Even if only one aide, and it could be anybody, that aide could be anybody, that saw that she was alone with him. So two people need to see him give her the warning, and then one person needs to see her actually be alone with this fellow in order for her to become a sota. However, Rabbi Yoshua Omer Mekani La Al Pishnayim Umashka Al Pishnayim. Rabbi Yoshua disagrees, and he says, just like the kinoi has to be in front of two aidim, so too the drinking of the, so too the being alone in a room with the guy that she's not supposed to be with also has to be verified by two aidim. Two aidim have to see her walk into the room with this guy, and two aidim have to see that she spent the requisite amount of time in the room with that guy. What's the requisite amount of time? So there is a shir yichud. The shir yichud is the amount of time that it takes for a couple to become intimate. We do this, not hopefully as a sota, but we do this at every wedding, right? We require the chasen and kala to go into a yichud room, and the Masada Kiddushin normally tells the eidim, listen, don't let anybody into this room for the next X amount of minutes. That amount of minutes is the amount of time that we assume it could theoretically happen, that a couple could get intimate in that amount of time. So we normally assume l'chumra that it's 8 minutes. It's probably much shorter than that, actually. But okay. Okay, Ketzad Mekanila. So what's the process? A guy's jealous of his wife. He wants to get this process underway. So what does he have to say to her? So Omer Labifnei Shnayim, he says to her in front of two Edim, Al Tidabri Im Ish Ploni. Do not speak with this guy. And then Vidibra Imo, she goes and she speaks with him. Adayin Him Mutaris Labesa. No problem yet. She's still mutter to go back to her husband. Umetaris Lachu Betruma. If her husband is a Kohen, she's allowed to continue eating Truma food, which a woman who's married to a Kohen is allowed to do. But if she didn't just speak to the guy, Nichnasa Imo Labes HaSeser, she went and was alone with the guy, she secluded herself with the guy, Vishasa Imo Kadei Tuma, and she spent the amount of time with the guy that it would take to become intimate with him, then Asura Labesa, then she becomes Asur to her husband, Vasura Lechel Betruma, and if her husband is a Kohen, she's not going to be allowed to eat Truma. V'im Meis, and if the husband dies at that point, and they don't have any children, so this is a tricky thing. Normally, if a husband dies and they don't have any children, we do what's called chalitza or yibum. Yibum is that the brother of the husband would have to marry the woman. Chalitza is if they don't want, if the brother's not interested in marrying her, they do a whole procedure with the shoe. We still do chalitza. We don't do yibum. Up until like a few decades ago, there were certain svardim that were doing yibum. They don't do that. I think they outlawed it in Israel. There were certain svardim that came to Israel and were still practicing yibum. Someone told me they were at a Shabbos table with a woman who was actually involved in a yibum, but I think it's been illegal in Israel for a long time to do that. So we do chalitza instead. Chalitza is the safe way to go about it. See, because to marry your brother's wife is an issur d'oraisa, except for when it's a requirement of yibum. Meaning, let's say your brother had children, then the brother died. To marry his wife is an issur d'oraisa. If your brother got divorced, to marry his wife is an issur d'oraisa. The only time you're allowed to marry your brother's wife is if he dies without children. So whenever there's any suffix about yibum, we don't want to risk it, because it might be, it's not like a no-lose proposition. If you do it when you're not supposed to do it, then it's an issur d'oraisa. So therefore, we always, chalitza is when we're not sure what to do. So in this case, if the guy dies, we don't know if this couple's going to be allowed to stay married or not, because he expressed his jealousy to his wife. She then was alone with the man that she wasn't supposed to be alone with. She just hasn't drunk the mesota yet to determine whether she's innocent or guilty. If she's innocent, they're allowed to go home together. They're allowed to stay married. If she's guilty, they're not allowed to stay married. So we don't know if this marriage is a worthy marriage. And therefore, if he dies at that point, I don't know if his brother is allowed to take over his marriage. So.
Yeah.
No, they only drink the water if the husband's alive. You need a husband there to get her to drink the water. So she doesn't have that opportunity, and therefore she does chalitza in order to free her from the brother, but you can't do yibum. Okay, so chalitza is velomis yavemis. So says the Gemara. Gemara starts on a totally different topic. Gemara says, well, wait a second. How did we get to sota? Michti, tanami nazir selik. The last mesechta in Shas was mesechas nazir. If you look at a standard edition of Shas on the binding of the page, it says nedarim nazir sota. Right? So right after Nazir comes sota. What in the world does Nazir have to do with sota? We're familiar with Nazir. Growing the hair long, not becoming tummy to a mace, not drinking any wine or eating any grape products. What in the world does it have to do with sota? Maitana de katana sota. What were we learning about that leads us to learn about sota? So says the Gemara, Kidarebi, Detanya, Rebbe Omer, like Rebbe taught. Rebbe taught the following. Laman nismecha parshas Nazir le parsha sota. Well, you know, in the Chumash itself, the parsha of Nazir and the parsha of sota are juxtaposed with each other. They both appear in Parshas Naso. Why are they juxtaposed with each other? Because that teaches us that if someone sees what happens to a sota, if someone sees what happens to an unfaithful wife, he's going to be inspired to give up wine. Why would he be inspired to give up wine? Because this kind of misbehavior often happens when people are not exercising judgment and willpower. Judgment and willpower tend to go away when you're drunk. So if a person sees that, look what happens to this woman who made such poor decisions in her life, he's going to give up wine, and that's why sota and nazir are juxtaposed with each other. So therefore, right after Maseches Nazir, we have Maseches Sota, to tell me that when you see a sota, you become a nazir. Says the Gemara, wait a second. That's backwards, right? If seeing a sota makes you want to become a nazir, sota should come first and then nazir, right? It shouldn't be nazir then sota. So says Gemara, v'lisni sota v'hadu l'lisni nazir. Why isn't mesechas sota first and then mesechas nazir? So says Gemara, well, it's complicated. There are so many mesechas, and we have to come up with an order that works for all of them, and we have to make everything fit into place. So I did a ton of ksubos. We had ksubos all the way at the beginning of Seder Nashim, or almost at the beginning of Seder Nashim. So once we have mesechas ksubos, Tana Hamadir. Mesechas Ksubos is a fascinating mesechta. It's called the Shas Katan because it covers pretty much many topics from throughout Shas get covered in Mesechas Ksubos. The entire seventh parak of Mesechas Ksubos is all about Nidarim. So there's a whole parak about Nidarim, about vows and oaths and things like that in Mesechas Ksubos. So once we have Mesechas Ksubos, we have a whole parak about Nidarim. So Tana Nidarim. So the Tana figures, we'll put Nidarim next because once we're on the topic, might as well continue into Nadarim. Vaidit to Tana Nadarim, so Tana Nazir. And once we talk about Nadarim, Nazir is a subcategory of Nadarim. Nazirus is a vow. It's a type of a neder. A neder is a vow to do whatever or not to do whatever. A Nazir is a vow to be a Nazir, to take on all the practices of a Nazir. Didami l'Nadarim, because Nazir is very similar to Nadarim. V'katani Sota, and then once we have Nazir, we're going to learn Sota Kidurem. Like Rabbi taught us that we're supposed to, that Sota and Nazir are associated with each other. But that's why Nazir comes first, because Nazir is part of a sequence that started with Perek Hamadir in Mesechus Ksubos, then led to Nadarim, then led to Nazir. Oh, but once you're talking about Nazir, you got to put Sota in there because of their relationship with each other. Okay, now that's as far as just taking care of understanding why this Mesechta is where it is. So says the Gemara, Hamakane, the first word in the Mesechta is, if one expresses jealousy, sounds like you're not really supposed to do that. If you do it, but in a healthy relationship, if you're being a good husband, you should, the first time you see your wife talking to another man, you probably shouldn't say, I don't want you talking to that other guy anymore, and if you do, right, I mean, that's probably not the way it's supposed to be done. Hamakane dieved in l'chadchila lo. The implication is, this if you did it, but you're not really supposed to do that. So kasavar tana didan osu l'kanos. The Tana holds that you're not supposed to do this. You're not allowed to do this. It's amazing. The Torah says you're not allowed to do it, but you're empowered to do it. Meaning it's part of living life as a Jew, is that we have bechira chavshus, we have free choice. There are certain things that we're not allowed to do, but God, I mean, if God doesn't want me to do things, why doesn't he just make it that I'm incapable of eating non-kosher food, or I'm incapable of speaking Lashon Hara? That's part of having a choice to do things. I'm empowered to do kinoi, even though I'm not supposed to do kinoi. It's usher for me to do kinoi. When Rish Lakish said his opening shira Masechah Sota, Amar Hachi, he would say the following: Ein mizavgen l'ladam isha el lefi ma'asav. A very fascinating, very important insight, that your wife is typically like looking in the mirror. If you think your wife is a rasha, then probably, you know, is a rasha'a. If she's you think she's evil, she's wicked, probably it's a reflection of you. God gives you the kind of wife that you deserve, or better, right? But typically not worse. Shenemar ki lo yanuach shevet harasha al garal tzadikim. God doesn't put a rasha together with a tzadik. So if you think your wife is an evil person, a terrible person, probably a good idea to look in the mirror. Am Rabbi Chana, am Rabbi Yochanan, v'kashin lezavgan kikriyas yamsuf. It's as difficult to match shiduchim as doing kriyas yamsuf. Very difficult line in the Gemara. I would imagine it's easy for God to do kriyas yamsuf. He probably does like that, and kriyas yamsuf happens. So what exactly that means? A worthy question, but not for now. Kasha lezavgan kikriyas yamsuf. So shenemar, because the pasuk says elokim moshe v'yichidim baisa motzi asirim b'kosharos. That Hashem matches a man and a woman as individuals, each one coming from their own father's house, and he creates a house together with them, and that's just like when Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. So it says, really, is it so hard to make shiduchim? Eini, v'amar avidom arav, arbaim yom kodem yisir savlad, bas kol yotzis v'omeres, bas ploni l'ploni, bayis ploni l'ploni, sada ploni l'ploni. That 40 years before a person, 40 days rather, before a child is born, a heavenly voice comes out and says, this guy's wife is going to be that woman, this guy is going to live in that house, this guy is going to own that field. So it's all predetermined. Doesn't sound like it's difficult at all for God. It sounds like it's all predetermined from 40 days before he's born. So how could you say it's difficult, like Kriyas Yamsuf? Says Mara Lo Kasha. Hub is Zivug Rishon, Hub is Zivug Sheni. The first Shidduch is easy. That's everyone. You fall in love and it's great and everything. Second Shidduch, much harder. Meaning on a second marriage, to fall in love, you know, to have everything work out. And there are kids in the picture and it's complicated and this, you know, it's much, much more challenging. That's where we say it's Kasha Kriyas Yamsuf. Rabbi Lozo, Rabbi Kani Lal Pishnayim. Rabbi Lozo, oh, I'm ready past the 15 minutes. So you know what? We'll stop there at the 15 minute mark. And Be'ezus Hashem, next time on Wednesday night, we'll pick up with Rabbi Lozo Omer, and I'll try to move a little more quickly. Okay, everyone, enjoy the Chavrusah.